Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. It's that time again, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're sitting down. You're on top of your PC. You're sitting in front of your PC. Your speakers are on full blast. Or you're on your tablet, your phone, or you calling up and listening on your telephone. But as whatever way you do it, if you're here, you're listening to the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT, a.k.a. The Master, as always. And I always say this, I'm joined by my fellow Jersey guy, Mr. Double J, Jeff the Joker, and we make up two-thirds of the FSP Crew Show. We got a great show in store for you today. We're going to be talking about some NCAA on and off the court. We're going to be talking about some an NFL player that's in dire trouble, really in trouble, I should say. We're going to be talking about cap space and possible movement of a big-time player. Also be talking about the big fight that's coming up in about, in fact, a month from today, to be exact. And also talking about maybe a little bit about the draft. Got a lot of things to talk about, 1 hour to cover them. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is a place to be if you want to talk to Jeff or me. Chat room sitting out there. If you want to put your knowledge or a question or a comment in that chat room, do so. But we always welcome you to actually jump on the phone and converse with us. But without further ado, ramble on for a couple of minutes, setting things up. Let me bring in my fellow Jersey guy, the guy from North Jersey. What's up, Jeff? How you been, man? Hello, Jeff. You there? Hello, Jeff. Jeff, you there? Can't hear you, Jeff. Well, we're going to have to move on without Jeff because I cannot hear Jeff at all. Don't know what's going on, but I think he's going to call back. All right, what I want to start the show off is with this. As we know, the NCAA tournament is taking place, men's basketball and also women's basketball. And but I want to talk today about the men's basketball. Let me put it this way. I'm going to talk about, before we talk about the tournament, I want to talk about what's taking place. Let me see if I can bring in my fellow Jersey guy here again. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Jerry, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes, I can.
All right.
Lady, that's my fellow Jersey guy, Jeff. What's happening, my man? How you been last week?
I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, boy. Jeff, you don't sound too enthusiastic tonight. What's that's okay, though.
I'm all right. I'm just a little reserved.
Okay. I hear you. Anyway, the first thing on the agenda, Jeff, we're going to be talking about the NCAA. And I'm not just talking about basketball, but overall the NCAA and this big controversy that's taken place. And Arkansas just passed the same law, and I just realized that there's 19 other states that have a similar law as what Indiana passed recently, and Arkansas just passed in the last few days. talking about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That's what it's called. It's a law that these states are passing that they can refuse service any particular person because of the business's religious beliefs, and it specifically was supposed to be directed toward gay and lesbians, but the way the laws were constructed or written and passed, it could lead to any old body looking any old way, no matter what color, could walk into an establishment, and that establishment, and I'm talking specifically about Indiana, could refuse them with the premise that it's has to do with their religious beliefs. The governor from Indiana, after a big brouhaha about it, just like the governor from Arkansas is going through it now, backtracked and asked the lawmakers to revise the law, just as in the past couple of days, the Arkansas governor has followed suit. But the president of the NCAA, which is Mark Emmert, had this to say a couple of days ago, and then I'll give you a chance to respond, and then I'll come back and say what he recently said, like in the last day. But this is about Monday or Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. I have a clip here of what he said, and then we'll go from there.
Days before the Final Four tips off in Indianapolis, the head of the NCAA told NBC News on Monday that he is deeply concerned about an Indiana law that opponents say could be used to justify anti-gay discrimination. Quote, "Our core values are built around notions of diversity and inclusion," NCAA President Mark Emmert said. Mike Pence says that the state cannot substantially burden a person's exercise of religion unless it is furthering a compelling government interest and acting in the least restrictive way possible. Public figures ranging from business leaders to celebrities have condemned the law.
All right, this took place. I have a article here that I'm going to read before I give you a chance to respond, Jeff. He expanded on it a little bit more. I'm going to read it, and then I want your comments on it. This is from ESPN. It's from Dana O'Neill, excuse me, college basketball reporter. NCAA President Mark Emmert said his organization will wait to see what Indiana legislature crafts as a fix to its controversial, like I said, Religious Freedom Restoration Act before reacting further, but adding that the controversy already has the NCAA looking more thoughtfully at where it will host the championships in the future. On Thursday, Indiana lawmakers, which was today on Thursday, after a week of protests and denouncements from major businesses, including the Indianapolis-based NCAA, announced it would amend its religious objection law. The revisions made it through both legislative bodies in the state, and Governor Mike Pence signed the RFRA clarification bill on Thursday. "We believe that it's absolutely positively needs to get fixed," Emmert said. "It's a bill that creates an environment within which a college athlete would find it very difficult to operate." Emmert, who condemned the law when it was passed, added that as an employer with more than a governing body, one that has 500 people on staff, the NCAA, in his opinion, would have to at least consider relocating its headquarters if the law was not amended. "If we believe we couldn't conduct our affairs in a fashion that didn't prohibit discrimination against people for any number of reasons, then I would surely recommend that we move," he said. 19 states, and I didn't know this until I read this article, 19 states have some sort of RFRA laws on the books and 13 others, including Indiana and Arkansas, have passed or are considering them. Emmert stressed that the particulars of each law are different, making it impossible for the NCAA to issue a blanket statement. But because of the conversations and controversies in Indiana, the NCAA will be looking more critically at where it hosts future championships as soon as next month when the Board of Governors gathers. 2 weeks ago, this would not have been on the Board of Governors' agenda at all to look at, said Kansas State President Kirk Schultz. The Board of Governors chairman, obviously, because what happened here in regards to what occurs eventually over in the State House, this is going to be on our April agenda. So questions like, should we look at any particular social issues in that state that hold championships of any type, not just for the Final Four, but any of the multitude of championships, will now be something that we're going to take a close look at. Consensus will be difficult, Emmert said, since the NCAA is made up of its membership, including many schools that have strong religious affiliations. But he believed change could occur if necessary. Already, the NCAA has refused to hold predetermined championships in South Carolina or Mississippi because both state houses continue to fly a Confederate flag. This is 2015, people. South Carolina hosted a women's basketball NCAA tournament game this year, but only because the format was changed to allow the top-seeded teams to host the games. Jeff, that has a lot in it, including 19 states that have some sort of version of that act. And I know you being of the Jewish persuasion and me being an African-American, we're pretty sensitive to things of this nature. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I get it, but I don't get it. And these people, you know, with the recent legislation, should have thought more because it could, it could stir up a lot of things. Like, at first I thought, well, why do you need this type of legislation? And I think one explanation I heard was something like, if you're a wedding photographer, you're not, and if you don't want to take pictures at a gay wedding, you know, you should have that right, whatever. It's like, okay, you know, I mean, if you're a private business, you could conduct business with whoever you want or don't want. But thing is, that's bad business, though. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I don't know why the politicians get involved with this stuff because, well, I'm sure, especially in a lot of states, they want to cater to, you know, the conservative, Christian right voters. But there's also, you know, in some states, you know, the politicians are more interested in catering to the gay voters and people who are sympathetic to them. It's like, I don't get it. Recently I was talking to somebody about it, in Atlantic City, they are allowed to refuse any patron, which they seldomly do. It's because it's bad business. And that's, I think the only people that really are looking to refuse are card counters. And even if, you know, if somebody's a card counter, when they're not using a computer or someone helping them, they have the right not, you know, to excuse that person. And I think, you know, I mean, I know this was an issue back in, the civil rights, days, some establishments, this is going way back down south, you know, with this, you know, a lot of establishments refuse to serve blacks. And I mean, now it's hard to imagine, but I'm sure back then people were saying, well, it's private establishments, yada, yada. But that obviously was wrong. It's bad business. I don't get it. But then, like, some people will say, oh, well, you know, you're Jewish or this person's, black or whatever. And they'll say it's the same as being gay, It might be similar, but it's not the same. And I'm not knocking it, but it's not the same. So.
Well, that's when I first heard about this. And this is before I even read this article and knew it was the 19 states that has some form of this. But the big news came out when Indiana came out with this, and it specifically was targeted, really was targeted against gays and lesbians. And I don't know if this was an underlying thing, because Indiana is supposed to be home of the Ku Klux Klan. So I don't know if that had anything to play into it. But when Indiana came out with this, and it was specifically said that for religious purposes, that they can deny service to because of religious beliefs. Well, and like I said in my monologue, that could be to anybody. It's not just specifically to gays and lesbians. It could be to anybody, and that's taking a step back, way back, because whoever decides to deny a person, regardless of who they are, what they look like, what color they are, he can hide behind a veil of his religious beliefs. And, you know, it was wide. It had a wide scope. But just like I read, it had a wide scope. And a lot of people that were thinking like me, like-minded people thinking like me, were saying, wait a minute. I know it's supposed to be supposedly against gays and lesbians, but anybody with any kind of common sense would realize that this can be used against anyone, no matter who they are. And you can hide behind, and I'll say it again, you can hide behind the veil of religious beliefs. And like you said, it's bad business, but it was bad business back in the 60s and the 50s and further back when people who looked differently or who were a minority would be denied service. But that didn't make a difference either. So I don't get it. This is 2015. If, in my opinion, and I always believed this, in my opinion, there's a lot of people that are against abortion. There's a lot of people that are against a lot of things and refer to the Bible as saying, especially gays, same-sex marriages, things like that, that it's against the law. And they're the ones that are going to be the judge of that. And in my opinion, the only person that can judge that, the only person that is supposed to be pure enough to judge that, is when you meet your maker, when you leave this earth, when you leave the live body on this earth and you meet your maker. So when you restrict somebody, you may not agree with it, but if it's wrong in the eyes of the man that really counts, then they'll pay their penance then, not to someone that's on an earthly being. I don't know if that makes any sense to you or anything like that. I just want to get your comments on what I just said.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, you know, people have a right to their religious practices, but there's a certain group within that just really just seem to be very inconsiderate of other people's beliefs, and they really want to, you know, just ram it down everybody else's throat. And I mean, this country, I mean, we're supposed to have separation of church and state. I mean, we technically do, but there's a few things maybe that aren't. But you know, a lot of countries have an official religion, and this country is only 77% Christian. So there's a lot of non-Christians. And then within that Christian, there's, you know, Christian groups and different denominations and interpretations and whatever. But just some people, this is another thing they try to ram down people's throat, was the prayer in school. It's like, if it's that important, you send your kid to private school. I never understood that. Like, why did they feel it was so important to have cool? I never, ever understood that. But to those kind of people, they just, they think everything revolves around them.
Yes, and I don't know if you knew this or not, and I'm trying to get it up now because a longtime TV evangelist passed away, and I'm trying to find out his. I'm trying to.
Shuler,
you know,
I think was the guy.
I had it up, and I lost it. Longtime TV evangelist. I forget his first name, but he just passed away. Robert Shuler passed away at the. I think he was in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. He was 80 something. So
late 80s, I think.
Yeah, and he was a very conservative guy, one of the conservative TV evangelists. Jeff. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we're taking a step back, and like if people know this show, it's Fantasy Sports and Politics, and this is the politics part of it. We haven't talked about politics for quite a while, but I have felt the need to bring this up in the beginning of the show, which is going to transition into the NCAA tournament. But I wanted to bring this up because this is a hot topic. And I had the need to bring it up and talk to somebody like Jeff that could quite naturally understand because of who he is and who I am, that something like this can lead to worse things. And it's 2015, people. It's 2015, not 1965, 1955. It's 2015. You think we would have progressed way past that? And like I say, Jeff, it seems like that no matter what you do, there's certain segments of the country that are trying to turn back the clock. It amazes with me that people refuse to move on and progress, and rather feel comfortable in regressing and wishing some of the things that were in place years back come back. And this is one of the negative things. Now, some of the good things that were in place past years, I wish were coming back. But this is one of the negative things, one of the things that you don't want to come back, because you give a person an inch and they'll take a mile. And this could progress to something even worse that I couldn't even fathom to think about. What's your thoughts on what I just said?
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. You know, I can't believe it actually got through legislation. Like, nobody said, hey, you know, this could get complicated. You know, I don't get it. But you know what? I'm pretty sure when it's done, you know, laws are going to change or whatever, or something good is going to come out of it, because those kind of laws can't stand up.
Well, you would think they couldn't. Let me put it this way. You would think they could now. Like I said, there are 19 states, and I don't know why there hasn't been a bigger uproar about this, but there's 19 states, maybe now, because Indiana and Arkansas are going through with this type of legislation. The other states that put this in place, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and that's just, I mean, when you say religious freedom restoration, you try to bring something back when you're trying to restore it. That, like I said, is scary. That's scary. You're trying to restore something that was in place at one point and was dismantled because of specific reasons, because of discrimination reasons, basically. And now you're trying to restore it in a different way with a different loophole, and 19 states have some sort of this right now? I don't know what to say, man. I know I'm rambling on. I know we're constantly going over and over this, but it's 2015. I when I hear things like this, and when I hear different other things that are taking place recently, like in the last 6 months or even less than that, and it has to do with certain segments of the society. 2015. Why haven't we progressed past this and look on to get the bigger and better things versus trying to turn back the clock? So it is what it is. I just wanted to go on it. We ran on it for about 25 minutes or so. We're going to take a quick break with a couple of commercial breaks. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about a promo break, I should say. And we're going to come back and talk about the NCAA Men's Final Four, which is going to be a pretty good matchup of, right now, the top four teams in the country and in the tournament, which would be Kentucky against Wisconsin, Michigan against Duke, to settle who's going to be the final two teams going to the final four. Going to the final two, I should say, to face each other to see who's eventually going to be the NCAA Men's Tournament champion. Well, before that, we'll take a break for a couple minutes, and then we'll be right back.
Victor Gardner began the Fantasy Sports and Politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FSP himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games, and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
Hi, I'm Russell Gilchrist. When I need fantasy sports advice, I listen to Fantasy Sports and Politics on Blog Talk Radio.
Looking for fantasy sports advice? How about informative conversation? Look no further, as The Master Plan features two men that can help in both areas. Jerry the Master Taylor and Lance the NFL Exporter Goodman provide you with a fantasy fix live every Sunday morning on The Master Plan at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. That's The Master Plan, Sundays 10 a.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK and streaming at spotonradio.webs.com. Information, motivation, variety, The Master Plan.
Are back, and I am JT, a.k.a. The Master. I'm joined by my fellow co-host, Jeff the Joker. We make up two-thirds of the FSP crew show. And if you'd like to call in and talk to us or even join the chat, we have a chat room sitting out there if you like it. The number to call in is 347-637-3220, 347-637-3220 if you want to join the conversation. And or ask a question, you know. It could be not on the subject at hand. It could be anything you like. And that's how we roll. It's an open forum. If you want to jump in here and talk about anything, we can do that. But right now, we're going to be talking about the NCAA Men's Tournament Basketball Championship, and which is, like I said, for the break, we're going to be talking about Kentucky versus Wisconsin, a rematch of last year, These two teams went up against last year, and Kentucky was the victor. And I think Kentucky has a 8-1 record, I think. No, that's on the other side. Kentucky quite naturally beat Wisconsin to go into the championship and eventually losing to UConn in the championship game. And on the other side of the bracket, other side of the Final Four, I should say, would be the University of Michigan State, or Michigan State University, and the University of Duke, with Tom Izzo as the coach at Michigan State, and Mike Krzyzewski, the coach of the Duke Blue Devils, going up against each other. And Izzo has a record against Mr. Krzyzewski of 8-1, I think it is, or 8-2, something like that. So not a good record against the Duke Blue Devils and Coach K. And I want to go on that side of the bracket first, that side of the Final Four, I should say, first, and then we talk about the other matchup. Now we got two teams. One was expected to get there. They're the number one seed in the South bracket. The other one, in my opinion, was unexpected, even though Tom Izzo is one of the best coaches in college basketball, that always seems to get his team at least to the Sweet 16, quite a few times to the Elite Eight, but to the Final Four, it's not a surprise. But in my opinion, this was a surprise to get him, considering what was in that bracket, as in Virginia, as in Villanova, as in Louisville, to get past all those teams. In some form or fashion, for Michigan State to get to the Final Four as the seventh seed against going against Duke as the one seed, Michigan State quite naturally being the East representative, which is the seventh seed, and Duke, like I said, is the number one seed in the South. Jeff, what is your thoughts on this? Going to be one hell of a matchup. Both these coaches and teams are tournament tested. Talk to me. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
You know, Kentucky got a little bit of a scare against Notre Dame, but I'll tell you, Kentucky looked very sharp at the end of that game. And I mean, Wisconsin's excellent, but it's hard to see anybody beating Kentucky.
We're talking about Michigan State and Duke.
You know, I mean, the Michigan State, it's hard to it almost sounds silly, you know, kind of an overachieving team. Supposedly this wasn't one of Izzo's better teams, but they've been playing great. And that's a tough one to call. That is a tough one to call. I mean, I got nothing against Michigan State. I like Izzo. But just to me, the best final game looks Kentucky versus Duke. That looks like a classic final game.
All right. Well, let's talk about this. These two teams played each other last year, and Kentucky was the victor. Quite naturally, I think. I know that Wisconsin is a older and a more experienced team versus the young guns that go approximately 10 deep in Kentucky. What is your thoughts on the Kentucky and Wisconsin game? Do you think this is going to be a classic matchup like the matchup they had against Notre Dame, or you think it's going to be more of a dominant matchup between the consensus is Kentucky, but maybe you have an idea that Wisconsin can get the best of Kentucky in this matchup? Talk to me.
I don't know. I mean, Wisconsin, they do have experience. They got size, but Kentucky is, I think, one of the few teams that's even bigger. I don't know. It's just it's hard to pick against Kentucky. It really is. And, you know, it's hard to root for them because, you know, people don't root for Goliath, but I don't understand all the hatred. You know, I feel like telling these people, don't be afraid of excellence, you know, because
right.
I think there's a few misconceptions about the Kentucky team. They're not all freshmen. They have depth. because that's been the knock on them in the past. And I mean, they seem like a good group, a young men. I don't think any of these guys have had significant off the court trouble, and they seem to be to have good sportsmanship when, you know, when they're beating a poo out of somebody on the court. I mean, I don't know. I don't see what's so bad about these guys. Hard to root for them, but you don't have to hate them.
It seems like when this team has, or a team has, so much talent that most people are rooting for the underdog. Want to see the big name go down? That's like the Lakers when they were big, the Chicago Bulls when they were big, the Yankees when they were big. Big name teams that are habitual winners and always have that edge, like the New England Patriots, is a prime example. Everybody's looking for them to lose anytime they go up against a team in a big game. They're looking. A lot of people are looking for the Patriots to lose, and it carry overs to almost every sport that the there's no favorite to win. That I think that. I mean, people will jump on a bandwagon once they do fulfill what everybody thinks is going to happen. But some people, a lot of people, wish that wouldn't happen. And they all have somehow to root for the underdog to pull off the spectacular upset. I think you're right. I think Kentucky is going to win this game. I think that the it's got not going to be an easy game. I think it's always tough when you met a team last year. Now, every year the team is different, but the basic philosophy, we talked about this last week, the basic philosophy of a coach and the way the team plays is usually carries through from year to year, unless the coach completely changes his whole scheme of doing things and goes in a different direction. But most coaches are creatures of habit. If they found something that works, They'll keep with that system until somebody figures it out, or they have to make it drastic changes in it and go in a different direction. But my point is this: Wisconsin played Kentucky last year. True, there are some players that aren't on Wisconsin and aren't on Kentucky that were participants of that matchup last year that aren't there this year. But basic premise of how these guys play basketball and what they do and how they run their offense is still the same year to year, and it's always tough matchup to beat a team a second time when they know exactly what you're all about. So Kentucky beat them last year. I can expect an even tougher matchup this year. And we'll wait to see what happens. We do have a caller on the line that's been waiting for a couple of minutes. Let me bring him up, and then we'll see what he has to say, and then we can go from there. Caller from the 678, welcome to the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT. State your name and tell me what you have to say.
Yeah, it's the NFL Exporter. What's going on, Jerry?
What's happening, my man? Long time no talk to. How you been?
I've been doing great. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Jeff, my other co-host, is also on the line. Welcome you to the show.
Hey, Lance. How you doing?
Now, what's going on, Jeff? How are you doing today?
Good.
All right, Lance, we've been talking about the matchup. We already talked about Michigan State. We've been talking about the matchup just now of Kentucky versus Wisconsin. And I commented, I'm pretty sure you heard it, about the second time around. They played each other last year. This is a matchup of a last year matchup, and I find it probably is going to be more difficult for Kentucky to beat Wisconsin this year because of the fact they know each other because they played each other and the same style of play migrates from one year to the next. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, Jerry, I thank you and Jeff for having me on the show. And, yeah, I think I would say first and foremost, I definitely think these are the best four teams left in college basketball right now, with the exception of Michigan State, which I think the committee did a pretty bad job as far as their seeding is concerned. They were definitely not a seven seed, maybe a four or five at the least, but three number one seeds and a Michigan State team who in the past 2 years were in the Final Four and in the Elite Eight the past 2 years. So what's intriguing to me, Jeff and Jerry, is that in these two ball games, you have veteran ball clubs versus your more rookie-orientated teams in Duke and Kentucky.
Right.
So I think in these matchups, it's going to be really interesting to see if the veteran Wisconsin and Michigan State team or the young, you know, freshman-led or younger group of players in Duke and Kentucky are able to come out on top. And so, I think Michigan State as well as Wisconsin have a legitimate chance at winning this because we've seen in college basketball, if you guys recall, when was it? Last year, Kentucky fell a game short to a veteran UConn-led team. And if you recall a couple years ago, when Calipari had John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins and Eric Bledsoe and that group of freshmen, they lost to a upper-class-led West Virginia team. So I think it's going to be real interesting to see, you know, if the veterans or the young guys get it done. And when I look at this particular matchup, I agree with you 100%, Jerry. I think that this Wisconsin team pretty much based their season around getting back to the Final Four and having another shot at it. You know, I'm pretty sure they did not know they were going to face Kentucky again, but when they looked at the bracket starting out, I'm quite sure this was a matchup that they knew if they can handle their business was very likely to happen. So I think the mental preparation has been there for Wisconsin well before this game here. And I tell you, to be quite honest, in both of these games, I think these teams are so evenly matched. Obviously, Kentucky has more athleticism, more athletic size on the front lines, but Wisconsin certainly has better outside shooting. And so, I think that this one is going to be very close, perhaps. I think like when we do our analyzing in football, in basketball, you have the same type of miscellaneous things that can happen, such as, you know, turnovers and free throws. I know that's something that helped out Michigan State tremendously in their victory over Louisville last week. They got in a 1-1 bonus with about 13 minutes left in that ball game. And so, you know, I think those small things, you know, who wins the turnover battles, the three-point line obviously is always a huge point differential, rebounding. So things of that nature certainly factor in. But I think if you look at these two teams, especially Frank Kaminsky, it's an outstanding job. I know he had 29 points the last game. I think he's a consensus All-Americans, averaging around 23 points, 9 rebounds for the tournament. So, you know, we're going to get a chance to see. I think that's going to be a great matchup down low between him and Towns. Seeing how those guys go at it, two certainly future NBA prospects. So I'm excited. You know, I find it hard to kind of lean either direction. I think obviously you give Kentucky the edge, but if there was any team who was suited to beat Kentucky, I think looking at this field that's left, you know, certainly a team that has probably the best shot when you look at, you know, Kaminsky on the front lines, great coach in Bo Ryan. Everybody came back to be in this position right here, and they had outside shooting, and they had the veteran leadership. So, you know, I anticipate a great game, and, it's kind of hard to call this one here.
And I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but the same three opponents, three of the opponents that Wisconsin had played last year, they played this year in the tournament. They played Oregon last year and beat them. They played Arizona last year and beat them, and now they have to play Kentucky again. I don't know what the odds are that they would have the same three opponents that they had last year this year, but I mean that doesn't help them. In fact, that probably is a testament of how good this team is. Not to say that they're going to win against Kentucky, but it just goes to show you how consistent and how focused this Wisconsin team is, and that's including the the coaching, the Bo Ryan, the head coach of Wisconsin, is, in my opinion, very underrated coach. And the, I don't know if he's – I can't say if he's finally getting his just due, but he's one hell of a coach. I've watched him coach in big games. I've watched him in a few Big Ten games. I watched the Big Ten. It's ironic because Wisconsin and Michigan State, I watched that Big Ten championship game, which I thought Michigan State had a hell of a chance to win the Big Ten championship, but Wisconsin pulled it out. That both these teams on either side of the Final Four are in this position to have a chance to either both of them or at least one of them move on to the championship. It would be a hell of a thing that the ones that were in the Big Ten championship meet in the NCAA championship. But anything can happen. You got two Big Ten teams in the Final Four. I have to say that I'm looking forward to both these games. One's going to take place on Saturday. Both of them are going to take place on Saturday. I'm looking forward to seeing out who's going to be the final two teams that are going to progress to Monday, which is the championship for college basketball, men's college basketball, and see who eventually is going to be the championship, who's going to win the championship, I should say, and then who's going to, especially out of Kentucky, who's going to stay and who's going to go. You got Harrison Twins. I think they're probably going to move on. It's the freshman class of the Kentucky Wildcats going to be one and done like they've had in the last few years, or are they going to stay and to try to repeat? This is all going to play out in the next 3 or 4 days. We'll see what happens. So next 3 or 4 days, and then a week after the game to see what happens. But it should be interesting. Let's move on to this because I want to talk about this because I think this is a big story we're going to talk about. Move on from college basketball. Move on to the NFL news because I want to talk about this case that had 100 witnesses on the prosecution side that had his fiance slash girlfriend testify that showed the some incriminating evidence that points to him, but we're talking about, I guess, coming back to Monday when the defense is going to present their case. Quite naturally, I'm talking about the Aaron Hernandez murder trial case that the prosecution rests the day before Good Friday. I don't know if you guys have been following this, but I want to get your thoughts on it. I'll go to Jeff first and then Lance. Talk to me.
Yeah, I'm not following it too close, but I know the prosecution rests. I actually did some research a couple summers ago on behalf of the show because I got cousins up where Hernandez is from in Bristol, Connecticut. My gut instinct was that I thought the prosecutors had a poor case. And then I think if that's the case, they try to scare the defendant or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not that familiar with the testimony that's taken place. But, you know, all they need is one juror to think they don't have enough proof. And, you know, I just... Whatever happens, I just hope, you know, justice is done. And I mean, this is a minor consideration. I doubt if he is innocent, I doubt any NFL teams are going to be interested in signing him. Needless to say, it's not funny. I mean, this is a serious matter. But I'll tell you, it's scary because it's like Goodell dealing with the Greg Hardy situation, another serious matter. Goodell wants to divorce the NFL from the criminal justice system, and that you don't want to go there. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And for some reason, he doesn't understand that. This thing with Hardy, whatever, if they suspend him for a long time, they'll probably get overturned in court, you know. But, I mean, the thing is, the criminal justice system is not perfect, not even close. But it is a system, as opposed to Goodell and whoever is working under him in the NFL. That's nothing. That's not a system. That's nothing, you know. That's about it. Whatever.
Before you respond, Lance, let me just say that Robert Kraft testified. Robert Kraft did testify, and the owner said that 2 days after the killing, Aaron Hernandez looked him in the eye and told him he was innocent. Now, like I said, the prosecution submitted 100 pieces of evidence, including a surveillance video from inside Hernandez's home that showed him holding a black object that appeared to be a gun less than 10 minutes after Lloyd's killing, and a joint found near Lloyd's body that had DNA from both men on it. So with that being said, I know that the Hernandez defense team is going to try to focus on the evidence, calling the question of testimony of an employee of weapons manufacturer Glock, who had identified the black object as a gun, and arguing instead that it was a piece of electronics such as an iPad or a TV remote. So they sound like they're going to try to take apart the evidence. Lance, thoughts on what you've seen or heard or read about on the Aaron Hernandez trial up until this point?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be looking forward to another show too, Jerry, when I can delve in on the basketball a little more, because I think it's a disgrace what's happened as far as these players coming out of school. But another day, another time. I'll just be short and simple. This guy's not going to walk. There's no way that Aaron Hernandez is going to be found guilty. So I guess this whole circus that's going on right now is really probably more or less about him trying to get the least amount of time as possible. But there's no way that this kid is going to be found innocent 100% and walk away from this thing. There's no way he's walking out. There's no way that a gavel is going to hit, you know, that the judge is going to slam the gavel in a verdict is innocent, and Aaron Hernandez walks away from this thing. If so, he is going to have, I think, as Jeff said, no interest from any NFL teams. But I think to his defense, he'll probably be able to make a lot of money off of books and a lot of other things. Because if he found innocent in this thing, I'm quite sure there'll be some type of civil action he'll be looking to take. Because let's face it, everybody has found this guy guilty. He's already guilty coming into the courtroom. So, I mean, if Aaron Hernandez comes away from this thing innocent and walks out of that courtroom a free man, that will probably be one of the top stories around the U.S. for a very long time. I simply don't see it happening. I mean, they pretty much all but called him guilty and put a verdict in. So I don't see it happening. No matter, I don't care who comes to the stand, who comes to his defense, what facts are relayed. I believe in the public's eye, he's already guilty, and I don't see him coming out of this thing innocent. I think the best case scenario for him is just getting the least amount of years on the sentence as possible.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I don't think he's long once this is over and it's completed that he's going to walk. I think it's quite evident to me that he's going to get prosecuted, especially when the prosecution showed photos of Lloyd's bullet-riddled body at the medical examiner's office. It was displayed on a monitor, and quite naturally, family members had a hard time dealing with that. The mother left the courtroom. The medical examiner said that there were three fatal shots that killed this guy, one to the heart, one to the lung, and went to the liver, if I'm not mistaken. And I think they also said that he had a gunshot wound that entered from the back, you know. And I'm probably thinking that the first shot probably was from the back. And I don't know, but I think the first shot was probably from the back. And he was shot six times. So they want to make whoever shot him, in my opinion, it was personal. When you shoot somebody that many times, it was personal. Versus shooting him a couple times. So I got to believe that even though the defense is good and he's paying for it, it's going to put out a very good defense and try to tear apart the prosecution's case. I think it's futile attempt to do that, but that's what he's paying his lawyers to do, to try to help him get the minimal amount of time or to get off completely. All right, let's move on to I got about 3 minutes left in the show. I want to talk about this because the fact is it won't surprise me if it happens. The reason I'm going to bring this up is because I'm talking about the Big D. The NFC East champion this past season, the 2013-2014 season, was the Dallas Cowboys. And the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys is Tony Romo. And Tony Romo restructured his contract, $17 million of his salary, and convert part of that to a signing bonus, which saved the Cowboys approximately $12.8 million on the salary cap for this year. That's roughly, give or take, the same amount of money that Adrian Peterson is due to collect for playing for the Minnesota Vikings or for anyone else, for that matter. Is this a move that the Dallas Cowboys are a preemptive move before they actually acquire Adrian Peterson, who talked to Jerry Jones saying he would like to play for the Dallas Cowboys or something to that effect? Or is it just a salary cap move to save some money for the Cowboys and not pick up Adrian Peterson? What's your thoughts, Lance, before I go to Jeff?
Yeah, just real quickly, something, and I'm happy you brought this up because this disturbed me. Early this morning when I was listening to ESPN radio and Tony Romo was on with Colin Hurd, and he said that he would have restructured his contract in an effort to keep DeMarco Murray. And, you know, it really bothered me because I'm like, what's the use of saying that now? You know, why weren't
right,
you
exactly.
expressing this? Yeah, why weren't you expressing this at the time the negotiations were going on? Why during this whole process prior to Dallas letting him walk or test the free agent market, why didn't I hear Tony Romo being very vocal and loud saying, hey, I'm going to management and I'm doing everything I can and I'll take a pay cut if I need to in order to keep DeMarco Murray. So, you know, that disturbed me and rubbed me the wrong way because I hate when people speak on things after the fact. And I understand, let's face it, if the Dallas Cowboys offensive line is going to open holes to the magnitude that they did last year, then from a business standpoint, I can understand them letting DeMarco Murray go because, hell, Joseph Randall and some of the other scat backs they have may be able to be productive. But in regards to did he clear room for Adrian Peterson, possibly, I think the biggest thing that's interesting me on this one, Jerry, is you know that there were tampering allegations made against Jerry
right.
Jones when Adrian Peterson kind of came out in an interview last year and said that him and Jerry Jones had contact, which is something that these players and owners are not supposed to do. So if he ends up in Dallas, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the end result is of the story that broke last year about the tampering rule, about Adrian Peterson and Jerry Jones having conversations when owners and players aren't supposed to do that. We know that the Cowboys, like any team, should do any and everything they can to win. So bringing over an Adrian Peterson to their team certainly is going to bolster their chances to just try to make a deeper run. But at the end of the day, I'm just looking and saying, if all of this is going to take place, you might as well have kept DeMarco Murray. I think it's a shame right now with the way that the free agent market is that, I mean, basically you draft a guy, and by the time he reaches his potential, you may not even have the money to keep him, so you really never even got any return value on your draft anyway. I know we're pressed for time, and so I'll press it over to Jeff, but I just really think the way that these owners go about managing some of these situations and the whole free agency situation, it's just a mess that I'm quite sure, you know, another day, you know, it's truly something we could probably spend an entire show talking about because I just really think it's a travesty.
Right. All right, Jeff, what's your thoughts before we get out of here?
I don't think Dallas is going to trade for Peterson. I know it looks like that with the cap, but, you know, they need a cap room, you know, for other players and for the draft picks. This is a very good draft for running backs. I think Dallas will take one, maybe two. And as long as they keep that line intact, it's not going to be too hard to find running backs who could get yards behind them.
Okay. Well, we come to the end of the show, people, and I want to thank you guys for joining me tonight. As always, good conversation. And for those people who have been listening or catch us in the archives, tune in next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Jeff and I, who are the steady two that are on this show, and quite naturally, we definitely welcome Lance at any time he wants to jump in a conversation to do so. He always is informative and enlightening in the conversation, whatever it is. Also, on 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll be on Saturday. We'll be the FSP show where Vic Gardner will be the host. I'll be the co-host. Tune in. We'll be joining this more of a conversation, talking more about the NCAA, possibly talking more about the Indiana and Arkansas legislation that just took place in the last week or so. Also talking about the Final Four, talking about NFL, all that good stuff. And then on the master plan, as always, we have a conversation, meaning me, have a conversation about the week in sports and the results of the things that took place leading up to Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where I'll start laying down what I thought. And also possibly, like I said, in April, talking about the draft, leading up to the draft, who I like, who I don't like, what I think they can bring to the table, who they may be going to. It's not a finite science, but I'll try to be as accurate as possible. We'll see what happens. With that being said, it's always been a pleasure. Tune in next week, like I said, at 8 p.m., and we'll be right back here again. See ya.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics.